it's a drink with different cultural experiences, but it's also there's a lot of shared experience in cider. I think it's quite a unique drink.
I'm a Herefordian. Herefordians always drink cider.
Of course. You're weaned on it. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes with us.
And making the cider and picking the peri and peri pears and the cider apples. And yeah, so it was kind of really special for me to something that had been so important to me in my kind of like formative life in France.
Right.
I kind of remade here as well. Yeah.
You're listening to Cider Chat, and this is episode 193.
We like cider.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, it is more audio snapshots from Ross-on-Wye Cider and Perry Company and their annual Ross Cider Fest, held this year at the end of August, the first day of September. We're going to be listening to cider enthusiasts and some experts in the cider trade. Coming up with that soon, but first, a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. First up on the news out and about in Ciderville is a reminder for you to get in touch with me about the second annual New England Cider Tour. And I've been hearing from folks who said, Rhea, my email was put into the spam folder and I didn't know that you replied. So you might want to check that if you've gotten in touch with me about the tour and signing up. And if you don't know about the tour, well, it is rolling out on October 31st out of Greenfield, Massachusetts. It's a one-day tour, so we return back to that spot. And we head up to New Hampshire and Vermont. In one day, we're going to be having products from six producers. So that's six cideries in one day, which makes it absolutely efficient. And also, if I do say so myself, a real chill and lovely way to experience six cideries. I mean, there are Cider Fest and there's, you know, like 2 hours where you could like taste 25 ciders. So that's one way to do it. But in my favorite way that I like to do it is kind of take my time and roll into the cider and taste it. And that's exactly how all tours I produce roll. And this one is a very special one because it's the second annual New England Cider Tour, and it kicks off the Franklin County Cider Days, essentially. So if you come in early and you want to experience a broader area of New England and producers, many of whom are also involved in Franklin County Cider Days, then come on this tour because it's going to be a sweet, sweet time. Folks are coming from Canada, from Washington State, from Virginia, all over the map to be on the tour. So that is an added benny because you get to meet like-minded folks who are full-on into cider and have the casualness of riding in a coach up and back to these spots. We're going to have a lunch at Fable Farm Fermentory in Vermont. They know how to do it there. This is like a beautiful operation happening at Fable Farm Fermentory in this converted barn that was moved over from New Hampshire to Vermont in an area that looks out at this landscape that's absolutely spectacular, like down into a valley. And we're going to be down in the bottom of the barn. That's where they have their cider cave. Yes, a cider cave, a long, long cave filled with barrels where John and Christopher Piana, these are two brothers who are the makers at Fable Farm Fermentory and our hosts. And they'll also be hosting a number of other cider makers while we are there too, such as Eden Specialty Ciders of Vermont. If you don't know Eden, well, you should know that when I selected a cider to bring with me, To the UK on my recent tour, I grabbed cans of Eden's Heritage Blend. Perfect offering to bring to UK makers and drinkers, enthusiasts who are a little particular. And also on the New England tour at Fable Farm, we're going to have Flag Hill. That is Sebastian Lusader. He is amazing. He's been in this operation for over 20 years, off the grid, fully organic cidery. And then Teddy Weber, who was one of the first people to reach out to me when I first started Cider Chat over 4 years ago now, and said, come on up and check out these apple trees that I'm scrumping out in like the back 40. And I was like, yeah, I'm there. He is great. I just had one of his special bottles of cider. I brought it with me at a wedding. I went up to New Hampshire, and it was nice to crack that open when, you know, they're serving you wine and all these mixed drinks. And yeah, I brought some cider to the wedding. Shh, don't tell anybody. Oh boy. Anyways, those are some of the folks just at lunch, right? That's at lunch. That's four cideries at lunch. And that we have the benefit of being there for a bit. And certainly John and Christopher are outstanding dudes in their own right. And what they're doing there is really exciting to witness. So if you want to be part of that tour, tell me about it is send me an email, Rhea@ciderchat.com. Send it to me now. I'll send you the details. And if you want to look at more of the details, go to the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Ba-dum, ba-dum.
I just heard from Travis, who is a patron of Cider Chat. He joined the Cider Chat Patreon page back in June and is just now able to get back to me. So obviously, Travis, you have had a busy summer, and I get that. So let's delve into what he is doing, and he is based out in Wisconsin. Travis writes, I've had a busy summer of orchard fun, failures, and lots of learning, and I've managed to find a brief lull between teaching, raising two tiny humans, and the fall apple harvest to finally respond. He says that he stumbled across Cider Chat a little over a year and a half ago, and it has changed his life. I've always enjoyed eating apples, but in my late 20s, I settled down on a small 10-acre parcel in central Wisconsin that had access to about a dozen semi-dwarf apple trees. In the fall of 2011, he pressed his first bushel of apples on a homemade press, and his life hasn't been the same since. In 2012, he planted four more apple trees, followed by about a dozen more the next year, followed by more and more and more, and today he has over 200 semi-dwarf apple trees of over 25 North American, mostly cider apple varieties. And he just planted two rows of high-density trellised apples on dwarfing rootstock for another 200-some trees, all cider varieties. Holy smokes! You are taking this hobby to another level here, which sounds a little familiar to me in Ciderville. He continues with, what began as dabbling in cider making has become a part-time annual fall activity. And he makes a pretty tasty dry cider with just a wee bit of bubbly. And he also has been trying his hand at grafting and budding to increase the number and types of trees on his property, as well as preserving many of the great seedling varieties in ditches and field lines all around my area. And again, this is central Wisconsin. He also has pushed himself to improve his orchard management skills and cider craftsmanship. He writes that Cider Chat has been invaluable for providing tips and tricks, access to experts, and exposure to new ideas and ways of engaging the wonderfulness of an apple. I cannot adequately convey how incredibly grateful I am for all the learning opportunities you have provided me in my journey towards, hopefully, one day, many years from now, becoming a full-time cider maker. Sincerely, Travis. Oh, man, that is really something. That just doesn't that catch our hearts and our souls, those of us who are so passionate about the palm, about cider, to hear this progression of Travis someone who is just kind of like starting off and following along. And that's exactly what I hope that Cider Chat does, is really encourage all of us, one, to stay connected. That's so important, because it could be lonely out in the apple orchard. Thank you so much for all that. And I'm so glad that Cider Chat's working out for you. I have another letter from another recent member to the Cider Chat Patreon page, and that is Jamie out in Washington State. Jamie writes, I found out about your podcast, Cider Chat, from a friend of mine who also happens to be an incredible cider maker. His name is Rick, and he is the mastermind behind Liberty Cider Works here in Spokane, Washington. Thank you, Rick. You rock. Awesome. He specializes in award-winning heritage ciders, staying true to the apple and to our local farmers. He has taught me a lot and has helped me develop a sense for great ciders. Jamie has been a cider drinker for many years. She tried her first cider in 2001 in Ireland. It was a Magners. But it wasn't until a couple years ago, when she started learning about cider and the process of making cider, that she really became hooked. The complexity of flavor and aroma that comes from the fermented juice of a humble apple is fascinating to me. She made it her goal to learn all that she can about cider, the cider making process, and the industry. A few months back, she passed her cider certification exam, and now she is studying to take the Palmier exam. There's so much to learn, and so this may take me a while. In regards to cider styles, she really likes to keep an open mind and try a little bit of everything. Her favorite, however, are usually the semi-dry and dry range, a balanced English blend, a tannic, Kingston Black, anything in the russet family, and the list could go on and on. She also has an appreciation for the complexity of native wild yeast fermented ciders. Wow. Well, that's pretty awesome there, right? I'm loving hearing that people are into that dry cider, which is, it has so much dimension to it that we don't, you know, I can't convey enough. Again, she finishes with, thanks again for your podcast. I appreciate what you're doing. I look forward to listening to many more. Well, how do you like those apples? Email from Wisconsin, from Travis and Jamie from Spokane, Washington. That is just like the tip of the iceberg. Let's face it, apples are everywhere, and good people too. And thanks to these good people and many more who are the supporters of Cider Chat at the Cider Chat Patreon page. Do become a patron too. It really helps keep this podcast on the air. You can find the link at ciderchat.com or just Google Cider Chat Patreon, spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. While there's just so much catching up to do, I feel like I've been on this journey out and about in Ciderville, and I'm just slowly coming in and really jazzed up. A few weeks ago, I was in the United Kingdom, in London, and then out in the West Country attending the Ross Cider Fest, and I am still as high as a kite from that experience. It has filled my cup completely, jazzing me up. If you can't feel it, you gotta know it. And probably it's because it's cool outside. That helps me to get, you know, it gets us all going in that way, right? So if you want to kind of catch up, if you're new to the podcast and you want to catch up to like where we are, listen to the last two episodes. 2 weeks ago was London Got Cider. Those were little audio snapshots via the Cider Chat Live kind of episode that I do. And then last week was all on a barrel smoker, cheese making, and of course, cider. And that was talking about some of the volunteers and some of the people behind the Ross Cider Fest. And this week, I'm bringing you more audio snapshots. In fact, the start of this here episode began with Elizabeth. She is a cider director at the Cider Museum in Herefordshire. So we're going to be hearing from her next, talking about that. And then you heard from Dick Whitcomb. He is a cider enthusiast extraordinaire based in the UK, based in Manchester, and just revs everybody up. And he and Kath Potter will be coming up. And then we're going to hear a little bit from Gabe Cook, a.k.a. the Ciderologist. He wrote a book on the same topic. And he'll be telling us a little bit of mythology around Mayhill. And then we're going to finish with both Ed and Beck. You heard Beck talking a little bit about at the very beginning of this podcast on how she was talking about the how France informed her, and it's all about apple picking and pears. I had this lovely conversation with them. So I'm going to bring you into all that. Again, more audio snapshots to give you a feel of the experience I had of camping in the orchard for 3 days and being fully immersed, like in a vat of the most wonderful people. We are lucky. We are really stinking lucky that we are in the, like this niche community of people at this cusp of just cider exploding around the world in the best way possible and making these connections now. And the best part for those of you new to the game is that the door is wide open and it's a party that everyone is invited to. So let's, I'm going to bring a little music in here, probably a little bit more singing from me and my cousin Jay with our favorite tune, We Like Cider. And then we're going to roll right into my conversation with Elizabeth Pimblett, the Cider Museum Director in Herefordshire at the Cider Museum. Pretty cool stuff. Let's roll.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Pimblett from the Museum of Cider in Hereford in England.
Full title?
Yeah, yes. And quite a glamorous title.
It is. I mean, yeah, it's super cool. I mean, how do you handle with all that kind of celebrityhood?
Oh, gosh. I realise I'm very lucky to be in the position I'm in. We are the only Arts Council accredited museum in the UK, so that's like the benchmark, the industry standard. And so, you know, it's a bit of a heavy burden, really, trying to represent the whole of the UK.
I was wondering, I mean, like cider, like, you know, it's not one where you could kind of like hide under the pillow. I mean, people are like have high expectations around here for cider. In my mind, I could be wrong, I'm on how it's going to be explained, how it's going to be established for an outside audience. How did it get kind of curated? And or you came into this and it was already set up and then you've been putting your own mark on it.
Yeah, it was started in 1972 and it was started by Bertrand Bulmer, who is the chief exec of Bulmer's, the largest cider making company in the world at that point and still is, I think. Also Henry Weston of Weston Cider, another great local Herefordshire company. And also Professor Hudson from the Long Ashton Research Station. And they wanted to make sure that the stories of cider were captured. They were acutely conscious that there was a danger of things being lost. So it was set up. They opened in 1982, and it was a gradual opening of the building, taking on more and more of the building. So I came to it nearly 3 years ago, and I came from a professional museum background. Mm-hmm. I saw something in my hometown. I needed to move back to my hometown, and this cider museum position came up, and I thought, that could be interesting. I was interested in social history and domestic history.
Were you drinking cider at the time?
I'm a Herefordian. Herefordians always drink cider.
Of course. You're weaned on it. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes without saying.
Well, it is part of the DNA, really, but yeah, it's almost like an unsung hero in Herefordshire. I think we do take it for granted a bit. So I came to this museum, walked through the door, thought, okay, yeah, it looks reasonably interesting. Came around the corner, saw the 18th century cider glasses, you know, the little beautiful things with small goblet shapes and lovely long stems with air twists, and I just thought, yeah, I've got to work here. So it was the art history that drew me in, but it was the cider makers that kept me there, because I didn't realise what a wonderful community I was entering into and how fascinating it is. And we're very lucky because we've got a wonderful archive as well, and the things that you can pull out of it, you know, we get researchers and that takes us off on a bit of a tangent, and then we start thinking, oh, this is interesting, and finding out more stuff about it. So, you know, it can keep me busy for a very long time.
I would say so. I have to ask you, this has been on my mind for a while. What is a cider flute?
Well, we have one cider flute that...
You have a very, very kind of cool one,
yeah,
historically, right?
Yeah. Ours is actually a replica. The original's in the Museum of London. And it was Viscount Scudamore's flute. So this amazing pioneer in the 17th century who, you know, it was the time of the Civil War. He comes back to his estate. He decides to really improve the orchards and really promotes this Red Streak apple, which takes Herefordshire cider, you know, up into the echelons it just makes cider in the 17th century. So this flute, it's a bit of an enigma because it's very deep, isn't it? It's a big, tall.
Is it what you drink out of?
Yeah.
It's not like a wine thief where I thought when I heard cider flute, it was something that would get dipped into the barrel and was what the cider makers called essentially a wine thief, which allows
like
you to draw out.
Pipette. Yeah,
but it's not.
No, it's actually a glass.
It's a glass.
It's a really deep glass. Okay. I suppose, you know, you get... it tapers down to the bottom, so it looks a little bit like a Victorian lager glass in a way, but it is quite big. So, and then the next century they get really small. So
a little bit of abundance and then scarcity. Was that a sign of the times, or just it just made more sense to have a smaller flute?
I think in the 18th century it's a very prestigious product, and you're drinking it in small quantities. It's a very fine cider. It's probably more like an apple wine. And also they would put cider brandy in with it. So you'd have this wonderful...
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thing.
The Cider Museum is open Monday through Saturday. And with Elizabeth on board, they're having some new exhibits. Listen to the most recent one coming now to the Cider Museum in Herefordshire.
I was doing a label about a beautiful... little barrel, oak barrel that people would take out into the fields at harvest time, in Victorian times especially when they were paid in cider. And I thought it would be nice to have a photograph or an illustration to go with this. And I knew that women were in the field as well, and they were being paid in cider as well, because I found a whole list of what they're being paid. But I couldn't find any images on display in the museum. And I started thinking, well, where are these women? And they are there, they just had not been focused on, and I don't think that's deliberate. It was just that they weren't seen as being an important part of the story. So that's how that exhibition came about.
You're gonna be changing that little paradigm up here. Hello. How long is that going to run through? It starts in October, and it's
going to be up for a couple of months. But then I think I will use elements of it in the museum, so that I'll just use it to bulk out existing exhibitions. And I mean, they're these wonderful watercolours that we've got that these gentlewomen did for very important books, the Pomonas, mm-hmm. which were produced in the 18th and 19th centuries. Mm-hmm. We don't know anything about them, really. So I've been trying to find out who were they, what do they look like, what was their background. Yeah. And some of it I'll never find out because they didn't marry.
Wow.
And they, you know, haven't left that much of a trace. But it's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for doing that and your work. I mean, without that, there's a whole other story that would be missing, and it's really important. Work that you're bringing forward.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
And,
I think it's such a dynamic time to be a woman involved in cider, isn't it? I mean, it's a dynamic time to be involved in cider, full stop.
Sure, certainly more opportunity.
Yeah.
As there's more equality and everyone is seen as valuable, not pushed off to the side. That's fantastic.
It's a pretty inclusive community, I think, the cider community. I've felt them to be very, very welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You are listening to Elizabeth Pimlet, the Cider Director at the Cider Museum based in Herefordshire. And the next exhibit coming up opens on October 5th, 2019, and it is called Women and the Art of Cider. Keep on checking this website. I will put the link in the show notes to this here episode 193. Next up, we're going to hear from Dick Whitcomb, who is always active on the Cider Twitter feeds out there in Ciderville. And in this case, we're going to be speaking to he and his wife, Kath Potter, who just became a palmier. A certified palmier. So let's head there next. This is out at the Ross Cider Fest in Ross-on-Wye.
My name's Dick Withicombe. My Twitter feed's Ashton1848. Ashton-under-Lyne is the mill town on the outskirts of Manchester where we live. And in 1848, there was a rebellion of mill town workers who were then arrested and deported to Australia. So it's a significant date in working class history in my town. So that became my Twitter handle when I first started twitting about all sorts of things, which now is completely dominated by cider. We created a blog called Cider Buzz Manchester, and we do tastings of cider for anybody who wants to drink cider. We will take them a few bottles and say, drink this and tell us what you think.
Check it out.
Yeah, and we find that 2 or 3 months later, they're selling cider rolled up in Devon on a farm. And as a teenager, we used to have a pop lorry, lemonade lorry, that would come into our farm. And I'd notice that my dad would always go to the front and come away with a little bag they'd take into the house. And when we got older, when we became teenagers, we realised that we had to meet this van at the top of the lane and get our own bag of cider, which was being sold, you know, not publicly. So, yeah, I've always drunk cider. But there was a whole period in my life where I found it really hard to find good cider. And it's been a joy in the last few years. We toured Normandy 4 or 5 years ago, and just finding natural ciders in Normandy, finding that the ciders in Normandy were different than the ciders from Brittany, and then finding places like Ross-on-Wye and the collaboration that takes place here. We've been coming to their monthly cider club, and they're so open because they have different cider makers who come there every single month, and they talk, they debate, they challenge each other, they find different levels of explaining where their integrity in cider making comes from, and they share experiences. And I've not experienced that in any other field. It's the beer community is a lot more competitive, I think, whereas I think the cider making community is a lot more sharing and helping each other.
Yeah. Have you ever made cider yourself as a little bit of fun?
Yeah, we have a lot of fun making a little bit of cider. We all meet up in our garden once a year. We collect apples from our local community. Our daughter brings some of her friends, so they do all the hard graft of the scratting and the pressing, and we stick it in demijohns, and then we forget about it, and we taste it. And it's good, sharp, acidic cider from Manchester, made with eating apples and cooking apples and as many crab apples as we can get hold of. I make lots of gravy with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You just, any particular cider, or it's just the one that's on the shelf, you pull it down and we make it.
Yeah, we end up with so much cider for ourselves that just use it as in any one of ways that we can. And Kath is a Morris dancer, so we take it to Morris dancing events. And a lot of people would say in Britain at the moment, cider is having a moment. It's beginning to create a bit of a buzz. Manchester is a very working class city. It was the centre of a series of mill towns around Manchester, which is where the clog dancing and the wearing of clogs, the clog dancing group that Kath dances with are called the Milltown Cloggies. But it's also, it's got a very multicultural city centre. I would guess it's pretty similar to Portland. It's got a lot of craft breweries. And what we found is that once we began to take the best quality cider that we could get our hands on and take it into bars or around to breweries, they would suddenly say, wow, these flavours are amazing. And of course, a lot of brewers are now into spontaneous fermentations, farmhouse style brews. The experts are the cider makers. And it turns out a lot of the leading brewers, first when they were first setting up, spent time with people like Mike Johnson down here at Ross-on-Wye, and they learnt about spontaneous fermentation. So we're finding that craft beer drinkers are very curious drinkers, and some of the flavours that they find in cider correspond with some of the flavours that they're looking for in beers. So we've had a massive expansion of cider drinking in Manchester. We set up a cider club, which meets once a month. We followed the example of the cider club down here at Ross-on-Wye. And
where does that take place, your cider club up in Manchester?
It takes place in a pub called the Crown and Kettle, which is a very old building. It was from mid-1700s. It used to be a court, an assizes court. It's been a pub for more than 100 years. It's got the most wonderful ceiling that they've done their best to preserve. And we had a Meet the Cider Maker session with Albert, young Albert from Ross-on-Wye, and we sold out of tickets and he captivated people. And Nikki Kong, the bar manager of the Crown and Kettle, came to us and said, look, I'd like this to take place every month. And we were quite sceptical, but we wrote to people that we knew, and a number of cider makers agreed to come. We produced a programme for the whole year, and our numbers have just grown and grown. In 2 weeks' time, we have Tom Oliver coming up, and we've sold 50 tickets, which, for an event of that kind, is unheard of in somewhere like Manchester.
Follow along and get involved in the conversation on Twitter with both Kath and Dick. I'll have links in the show notes to their Twitter feeds, and I really highly recommend it because they are doing something for cider that we need more of all around the world, and that is keeping the buzz going, and they're doing it in Manchester. Thank you both. Next up is going to be a little story about May Hill from the ciderologist himself, and that'd be Gabe Cook.
My name's Gabe Cook. I am the ciderologist, and I'm from a little village called Dymock in Gloucestershire.
So the three counties of Herefordshire, Gloucestershire and Worcestershire are the epicenter of the peri-pear universe, or certainly the British perisphere. And at the center of these three counties, almost sort of right on where the three counties come together, is a local landmark called May Hill. It's relatively innocuous. It's only about 1,000 feet, but it's well known within the landscape because it's got a stand of Corsican pines planted on top. They were planted in 1887 to commemorate the Golden Jubilee of Queen Victoria. So it kind of stands out. And the old saying goes, if you're within sight of May Hill, then you truly are in peri-pear country. And it sits on the edge of the Severn Vale, so you get a view of it from about 30 miles all around, and so it's very much centered as a place where these varieties grow well. It's stand to the terroir, it's beautiful, amazing soil quality here. Underlying geology is really good. You get the protective qualities of the Welsh hills and the rain shadow, so it's not too wet. You get particular weather systems moving up the Severn estuary, and it just, it's the perfect place. But there is another theory, a slightly more pagan theory, which begins at the creation of the earth itself, when the gods, plural, pagan story, were sat atop May Hill, lording over the splendor of their creation, being quite smug with themselves about what they managed to achieve, when suddenly there's the sound of a little godling is coming running up the hill, clutching a piece of fruit in its hand, and breathlessly it gets to the top of the hill and exclaims, I have found the elixir of life. So the chief god goes, what? And swipes the fruit off the little one. But I'll try. And bites into the fruit and has a couple of really good chews, and suddenly his face gurns in horror and disgust, and he spits out the fruit and says, it's not the elixir of life, that's bloody horrible. And the little godling goes, no, you're not supposed to eat the pear. You're supposed to squeeze it and extract the juice and make perry, and that will give you the elixir of life. But of course, it's too late. The god has spat out the pear. The seeds, the pips have scattered throughout the land, and from the ground rise these magnificent and majestic peri pear trees. Ta-da! Now, it's probably the whole terroir thing, but we're all a bunch of pagans down here, so what are you going to do? And, that sort of neatly and encapsulates all that I love about Perry is that it's got a real myth and mysticism about it, and it's something that is hyper local to this place. These varieties are, you know, there's about 120 have been readily identified and found or refound, and they're all named after villages or people or impacts upon the constitution sometimes. Yeah, it's something that's really, really special to me because this is where I'm from. I grew up 4 miles away from Mayhill, so yeah, it's awesome.
That was the best rendition I've ever heard of the story. Of course, I wouldn't expect anything less. Well done.
Thank you.
Follow Gabe on Twitter at The Ciderologist. There will be a link in the show notes to that Twitter feed, too. Next up, it's a chat with both Ed and Beck. Beck, she was holding their young son, Ruben. And this is all, again, taking place at the Ross Cider Fest, telling us a little bit of the background story to their time at Broom Farm. That is the actual location where the Ross Cider Fest takes place. And we will be sitting outside right by the large barn where all the music's taking place, a kind of a lull. In all these conversations, you're hearing a bit of a background noise because it is a happening scene there. Think kind of like a mini World's Fair of energy. A lot of cider and perry to be had. And a lot of good folks meeting up. And these were two that I didn't know them originally, and I got to know them, and I just adore them. So I wanted to bring my conversation with them to you. This is Ed and Beck.
Hello. So my name's Ed.
I'm Beck.
We've been coming here to Broom Farm for about a decade now. On the back of an article that Mike put in the Sunday Times, it was about cider and
kind of a lifestyle piece about what they did here, and they had the cider cellar, and it was really lovely and atmospheric.
But also on the back of so at the time, Mike wasn't producing a whole huge amount of cider, and he got a lot of apples to pick. He got a lot of stuff to bring in, and he I think it was at the time.
Most of his stuff was
went to Bulmers. Yeah. Most went to Bulmers. Okay. So it was basically about people coming in, picking apples, and it went off to Bulmers. Yeah. But at the same time, he wanted to give people something to take away with them, and so he offered it. He basically offered a weekend of picking and pressing. So you'd come down, you could spend a weekend, you'd pick and press, and he'd feed you with soup and cheese and what have you, and as much cider as you could fill your boots with.
You get like a tasting as part of it on the Saturday.
So there was a chap called Phil that used to work here. Phil was a man of few words, and Phil would do a tasting after you'd done your picking and pressing, and you could essentially make your own cider. So he'd take you through from the really dries to the really sweets and
bitter sharps.
And you could
blend as you went if you wanted.
If you weren't too keen on it, Phil would say, well, drink a bit more of that, because that, if you don't want that, that won't go in your blend, so a bit less of that. And so it was just a really fun thing to do.
The first year that we came, which was bloody cold, to be honest.
Oh, God, it was,
We had this, like, barbecue, like, sat in all of our layers of clothes.
It wasn't a barbecue, it was more of an open, like, it was a pyre of this huge bonfire that, yeah.
But we enjoyed it so much that we came back the following year, and Ed and I have come back every year since, pretty much, nearly, to pick and press. And then we kind of got overexcited. I came here for my 30th birthday.
5 years ago.
Party. We had our wedding perry done here as well.
So we came down here in 2004. 13. With a group of friends, like we did every year.
It was a special, special weekend. It was October. It was warmer than it is this weekend.
Yeah, it was hot.
In August, yeah.
It was hot. I mean, it was super hot. And Mike decided that the 10 of us that were here, or how many of it
would be a good opportunity to go and pick the Brockhampton perry.
It's about 5 miles down the road.
Orchard. It's quite far away, so they can't get there very often. A big group of us will go, we'll get it done.
It's one of these that needs picking in a day. And unless you've got 10 people to do it, it's not worth it. So go and do it in a day, pick it, bring it back, done. And that orchard, so it's all pears, and it makes this really wonderful blend of perry.
So
if you manage to find a bottle of Brockhampton blend, buy it, take it home. It's gorgeous.
It's very jolly.
Is it still available?
Oh, yeah.
I guess if you ask
me. Say it a little bit slower.
Brockhampton?
Brockhampton.
So that's the orchard, the Brockhampton orchard.
Okay.
So it's a house with an estate, and so let's say a couple of acres maybe, and on that estate there are several peri pears trees, all different varieties. I couldn't tell you what they were, but they make this most amazing blend. So we picked those in 2013, and we came back for Beck's birthday in 2014, and I'd proposed, and we'd come back.
You proposed here?
No.
So
in
South Wales, okay. And we come back here for Beck's birthday, and we'd thought about what do we want as wedding booze?
Because most people have champagne.
Yeah, or champagne or prosecco or something, and we tried the Ross Cider Sparkling Perries and thought, well, that might be nice. So,
and then suddenly Mike said, oh wait, I know, there's that Perry that you picked last year, and he went to John's special book.
Yeah,
John records everything.
Yeah,
he so John's special book.
Right,
yeah, John didn't tell me about his special book.
So John is right.
I had John on the podcast. He did not tell me about John's special book.
So John,
it's just standard practice.
Yeah,
he likes to know where things are.
Yeah, John is meticulous in terms of what comes in, where it's come from.
The truth comes out.
When it was pressed, which barrel it's in.
He was talking about his, like, you know, laid backness.
Oh, no, no. John is a man of order.
I've heard him say before, I like to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And so as I understand it, I don't know him very well, but as I understand it in his quiet way,
yeah,
he organises such that he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So he has a little book, so he'll say, like, well, this numbered, what's it called, barrel, has got these perries, these apples.
Yeah, this variety in it, or
this time,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Wow. And it was picked on this date, pressed on this date. That's mine, that's
sorry,
yours.
There was a line in his book that it said, this barrel, Ed and friends, picked at this date,
yes,
from Brockhampton. Yeah. So we went to it, and then Mike said, oh gosh, we'll try this. So we tried it, it was lovely. He said, okay, well, I'll put that into bottles and condition it into bottles.
Yeah, yeah.
And that will be your wedding parent.
Yeah, so a year later,
wow,
we came,
yeah,
back.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was.
So Phil used to work here, man of few words. Phil, when we'd come for picking and pressing in the autumn, I'd email Phil, and I'd like to say, Phil, we're coming for this weekend, and there'll be so many people coming, and we'll be here for this amount of time. Love to see you.
Is that okay?
All right. All great. So in my long, so two or three paragraphs, you know, just setting out what I wanted to do and what we were going to do, I just get back, Ed, fine, Phil.
Yeah.
And this was this thing that, and I kind of felt a little bit peeved that I didn't get any more than just, like, you know, three words. So when they made our wedding perry, Phil sent me an email and said, Ed, your wedding perry's ready. Come and collect it whenever you like. We've got 10 cases for you in the barn. It's this much. Come and get it.
Right.
And I took so much pleasure here in just replying, Phil, fine, Ed. It was wonderful. It was one of those things, you know, you just couldn't set it up. It was just, it's great.
Smoothness.
And that was it. And I'd waited 7 years to do that. Just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
And then we ended up coming.
I think you probably appreciated that.
I hope so. I really hope so. But I'll never know, because he's so quiet and such a man of few. I'll never know.
Oh my God.
But I really enjoyed doing it. And I still refer to it to this day thinking, yeah, genius, wonderful. Well done, Ed. You're such a wit. But in actual fact, I'm really not. I'm really not.
So that's a special moment. But we came here for our honeymoon as well.
Yeah.
Day staying in the cider shack after the wedding.
My,
so that was lovely. And it was, like, obscenely and ridiculously unseasonably beautiful weather. But this is a landscape, and this has apples and perry, and this has people and history and families, and this is part of our own story as well, coming here and making the cider and picking the perry and perry pears and the cider apples, and yeah, so it it was kind of really special for me to something that had been so important to me in my kind of like formative life in France.
Right.
I kind of remade here as well.
Yeah. Oh, what a fun couple to meet. Two Cider Chat listeners and fun-loving cider and perry drinkers. All the best to you both. And to all the folks who took the time to speak to me at the Ross Cider Fest. There'll be more episodes coming up that I recorded specifically with makers, so stay tuned for that. And if you haven't subscribed yet to Cider Chat, well, what are you waiting for? Just press that little button on your smartphone or on your desktop and do it today. And help me keep on keeping on with helping cider going up around the world. It's time to make cider where I live now. The bees are out buzzing and there's not a cloud in the sky. The old mill is just about ready and waiting for drops. I'm on the hunt for apples and pears by the lot. It's a fall you can feel in the air. It sends a shiver up your spine and a smile from ear to ear. The cider makers are hard at work throughout the lands, all around the universe, making cider as they can. Buy local, know your orchards, and yes, ask what vintage do you got? Just cause the feds don't know a damn about cider doesn't mean you have to be kept in the dark. Cheers to 2019's harvest, wherever you are. Raise a glass to cider and all the palms that we love. Yes, it's time to make cider. Cider's time is now. Spread news of this podcast. Get the cider flute out. It's time to make cider, so out I go. Till next time, Ciderville, I tip my glass to you and yours, and all that you hold true. Cheers. This is Rhea Windcaller, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards. Dancing in the street, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
You like cider?
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh, 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 oh
dancing in the street, staring at the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah,
we like sorry.